Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly.
Welcome back to the show. I feel like I haven't been here in forever, even though it's only been 2 weeks.
We missed you.
You did.
How was the birthday?
Too. Well, I went to Magic Mountain.
Right? Yes.
Took the day off, went to Magic Mountain. Oh my God, the place is crazy.
Really?
First of all, it was couldn't have been a better day to go. There was no one there.
Oh, really?
Literally, the last time I was in Magic Mountain, if you could get on 5 or 6 of the roller coasters in a whole day,
uh-huh.
would be like a miracle.
Sure.
You know, now they have Fast Pass and all that stuff. We didn't buy any of that extra stuff. We figured we'll just wing it. We'll walk in. If it's not crowded, we'll just have our regular ticket. If it is crowded, we'll splurge and get
sure.
the thing. No one there. We did
really?
The 4 of the biggest roller coasters in the first 45 minutes, just in and out, in and
oh
out.
Oh, my God.
Poor Christopher. Uh-huh. He didn't like them.
He didn't?
No, he started
felt sick.
Really nauseous after
no.
the fourth one, and he's like, I'm just going to sit this one out. I go, do you mind if I keep going? I mean, I'm here for the day. I want to get my money's worth. So he's like, no, no problem. Plus, there was no line, so he could go up with
sure.
me and wait on the exit part until I came uh-huh. back. Well, I got to tell you, some of these things are crazy,
yes.
like Riddler's Revenge. I swear to God, I thought that my head was either going to get decapitated
oh,
or it was going to explode. Like there
wow.
was, like it was like a G-force with pressure. I thought, this is what astronauts
uh-huh.
go through. You're upside down, you're
yeah.
over, you're under, you're this, you're that. It's like you don't even know where you are when you come back.
Yes.
Like, were you upside down or were you? It was crazy. So I did 15 roller coasters.
Oh, my God.
yes. These and I was going in the line, you know, sometimes Jeez. By myself. And these like young kids or young adults were looking at me like, what, this old broad, she's, I'm not that old, but I'm old for
right,
that. You
right.
know, there, I don't think there was anybody over 40.
Oh my God, this is amazing.
Line and all these kids and all this
sure.
stuff. It was hysterical. So then my very favorite, you're going to laugh, it's called Swashbuckler.
Okay.
Swashbuckler is like this huge boat kind of thing.
oh yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
It goes from side to side and up uh-huh. and it goes all the way to the top. You know when you used to ride swings when you were little and you try to get as high as you
yes.
could without going over?
Mm-hmm.
So it's that kind of feeling. Well, that was my favorite. It
oh.
was tame. It was fun. And, of course, these two boys are sitting next to me telling me about how it makes their body tingle and they're so excited. And then we had so much fun. We, like, lifted off the seats. The lady down below was looking at us like, don't you do that.
Right.
You know? And then we were done and they go, will you go on with us again?
Oh, my God. That is so, how old were they? This is adorable.
9.
So
and then
cute.
I had another young lady who was about 9 or 10 telling me how this feeling tickled her and she was so excited about that and
this
we sat up
so
at the front
cute.
It was so cute and then I made Christopher ride the little children's one at
oh,
the end
oh good and he was okay with that
he was fine
I love
he
that.
Was a great sport it was a good birthday then went out for sushi
oh,
and
good.
Just had a nice birthday week so
I love it
it's over now
yeah I know
yes. I'm Aww. Another year
but you don't
older.
Look any older
thank you
that
you're
helps.
Always so sweet you don't either
so
how about you
oh my God this weekend amazing, I should say, best friends from home flew me in for a belated birthday weekend, planned
oh.
a whole weekend for me.
Oh.
It was incredible. It was really, really just probably one of those special weekends. I just laughing
Lovely.
My balls off and just having
and
a great
no
time.
And little boys.
Nothing.
No.
And I can't tell you how nice it is to just go in a plane and just, you know, like I watched like 4 or 5 hours straight of Netflix. It was great. It was like heaven. I mean, nobody to disturb me. And so I had a really, really
love
nice
it.
Weekend.
Love
yeah.
it. Did you go someplace exciting?
They threw me like a little surprise-ish party.
Did you have a drink?
Yes, I did.
You
Can you
did?
Believe it? Like a half a glass of wine, which was
and
pretty.
And you were buzzed for the whole night.
Yeah, pretty much. And then the next morning I had a headache. I'm like, God
oh,
damn it. I am
darn.
Like so sensitive. But yeah, it was fun. Really, really fun.
How
so
fun.
It was like sad to come back in some ways because I do miss my girls and I miss my parents. But
how'd the boys do?
They did okay.
They didn't like run over David. And
I
like,
know. Can you believe
no,
it?
No.
Everything
he
seemed
survived.
To be okay. Yes.
Very good.
Yeah.
All right.
It was good.
So what I missed last week?
Okay. So last week we had Dr. Ellen Hendrickson. She is the author of How to Be Yourself, Quiet Your Inner Critic, and Rise Above Social Anxiety. And my guest host was Kathy Edgerton, and she's hilarious. She's like one of the funniest people I've ever met.
Is she a therapist?
It was awesome. No, she's in business. I mean, she's like in the entertainment business and does TV and stuff like that. But so it was cool to get like another layperson's perspective.
How fun.
Both do not have social anxiety, so it was kind of interesting to learn a little bit more about it. I mean, I'm sure some, you know, everybody has it on a little bit of levels at different times.
You didn't have any. Ever.
Not really.
I definitely did when
you
I was younger.
Did.
Yeah, because
oh, that's
I was
right,
so shy.
You told me you were shy.
Oh,
that's right.
I was so shy. It was painful.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I didn't... I amazingly, like, that was just not my experience. I mean, probably more as I got older almost a little bit. But so it was just really interesting to hear how crippling it can be for people. And Dr. Ellen did a great job and talked a little bit about her own personal experience with it.
That's great. Yeah, so. And I'm lucky, though, because I am counterphobic. So rather than running away from that which I fear, I just dive in.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's hence the roller coasters.
Exactly.
Insanity. I'm surprised I'm still alive. But
I know.
There you go.
I love it. I
forgot to tell you one thing, and then we're going to introduce our great guest for
yes.
today. So, of course, I have to Google information about roller coasters and how many people die on them every year after, right? So I'm
yes.
in the car after. And, of course, there's one, which was my biggest fear while I'm on one of them. Is what if the thing, like,
yeah.
snaps open?
Mm-hmm.
What if, like, the
yeah.
holding thing just lets go? There's no way you can hold
yes.
on when you're doing that.
Yeah.
You're dead. Well, of course, it happened to
Shut
this
up.
Lady. Yeah, the thing just malfunctioned and...
And she died.
Died like that.
That is terrifying.
So, there you go.
Oh, God.
Just leaving on a positive note.
Yeah, exactly.
So I probably
the
will
risk.
Not go back. Okay, today we have a fantastic guest, Carolyn Hauser-Carson, German trade, naturopathic doctor, humanistic psychotherapist, and family constellations facilitator. And she's the author of the book Blossom, Your Seven Steps Journey to Healing Childhood Sexual Abuse and Creating Your Dream Life. An internationally recognized speaker and teacher on the subjects of spirituality, emotional healing, and women's empowerment for almost a decade, Carolyn established EmpoweredBusinessWoman.com in 2008 and the Blossom Journey telecourse in 2010. Welcome, Carolyn. Hello.
Thanks for having me. Hi.
Hi. Yes, we're so excited. First of all, the cover of your book is absolutely beautiful.
It really is.
Did you have any say-so in designing that?
Yes. Actually, the first thing when I knew that I was going to write a book, the first thing that appeared was actually the image of this cover and the words. And so I made a collage, and then I'm very blessed because my brother and his wife, they're both the designers.
Oh, wow.
And so we worked really closely, and it is actually really close to the... I mean, it is what I saw in my inner eye. They did a phenomenal job.
Oh, that is
amazing.
Really beautiful.
Yeah.
So tell us, what inspired you to write this book? It's got to be something.
Well, I wasn't born. You know, I wasn't born thinking, "Oh my God, I want to be a sexual trauma healer when I grow up." Did not quite happen that way. I was suffering from eating disorders, anorexia and bulimia, from when I was 10 till I was in my early 20s, and basically had tried any and every modality. Even my mom even tried to have me blessed by an Indian saint and
wow.
and have me do art therapy and walk on coals and everything. Nothing worked, and so. By the time I was 21, I was basically, my prognosis for survival was 5%, so it was very low. And luckily, my mom hadn't given up and brought me to another modality, which is called Family Constellations, and I went to a weekend workshop and went through the process, and within 6 months, I was healed.
Wow.
So that was a big breakthrough for me, and obviously, people around me felt like, okay, if you've been able to have such a breakthrough, you should learn how to help people and make this your life
mm-hmm.
purpose. And so I went and studied to become a naturopathic doctor and psychotherapist and thought I had it all figured out. And then by the time I had my first child in my late 20s, and when she turned three, with her turning three, my early sexual abuse was triggered. So this whole time I had no idea that I had been sexually molested as a child until I basically was almost in my 30s. And to make a long story short, with that triggering moment and me having gone through all that training, my spiritual teacher at the time said, you know, I think that this has to do with your purpose, helping people around healing, you know. So when I basically found out myself, I then designed the healing journey for myself and took a bunch of women with me, and that's how the book was born.
Wow. How did you discover that? Did you just all of a sudden have a flashback? I mean, I've heard of so many people who, like, they'll be bathing their child and all of a sudden they remember, you know, being, fondled by somebody wrongly, etc. How did that happen for you, if you don't mind sharing?
Yeah, I didn't quite have memories. I actually went to L.A. and got a hug by Amma, the mother of unconditional love, who gives free hugs. So she hugged me, and then her high vibrational hug must have done something. Mm-hmm. And my daughter turning 3, and just seeing her, that just started feeling really restless and just feeling like something happened. All of a sudden, everybody around me was going through discovering that they had sexual trauma. You know, so because you know how it is when your mind starts to focus on something, all of a sudden everybody, mm-hmm. and it's kind of like in your face. That was totally in my face, and the feeling just grew stronger and stronger. And then I worked with somebody who helped me recover the memories.
Wow. Mm. Oh my God. Yeah. But wow. What a gift you were able to, yes. You know, turn that outward and help other people and recognize, you know, what worked for you can help for others.
Yeah.
So tell us about the book and, you know, how it's organized and what your intention is and, you know, what kinds of audiences are going to benefit from it.
Yeah, so my intention with the book was really for it to be a self-containing tool that either groups of women could work through together, that if you're by yourself, you can work together and really actually create lasting change in your life. And I shared with you guys before that I had several books in my life that had done that for me, so I modeled those books because in my life I had huge changes just from working through books. And so what I've learned about healing and trauma healing is that it is much more an energetic and a process around healing the nervous system than really a mental health or psychological problem. And so therefore, the journey is really one from getting out of your head and into your body and learning how to use your body as an instrument for integration. And so my book is structured in a way where you basically start learning these tools so that then you can really use your body as an integrational tool.
Mm. Can you give us an example of one? That what's your favorite one or something that would be, you know, simple?
Yeah, I mean, they're all my favorite ones because they all build on each other.
Sorry,
but just to give you an example, a really practical example, the reason why people don't feel safe, usually after something like this has happened, is that they don't trust themselves anymore and they don't trust their intuition anymore. And the problem with that is that our intuition is actually the thing that we need in order to navigate ourselves towards a better life and also to keep ourselves safe. And so one of the steps, the third step, has to do with really learning to listen to your intuitions and find what your intuition, when it speaks to you, feels like in your body. So, you know, going, bypassing your mind and your head, basically, and really learning what it feels like in your body. Mm-hmm. I call it finding your true yes and no.
I love that. And I also, on page 125, I love the exercise. It says, pay attention to your inner voices. And if you don't mind, can I read this little paragraph for our listeners?
Sure.
Okay, identify some of the voices that you listen to, specifically your pain body, your wounded little one. Listen for your inner wise woman as well. Throughout your week, pay attention to your voices and journal about them. See if you can identify your pain body as a separate creature that lives off your emotional negative energy. See if you can sense when you are either searching for love from the place of the little scared little child or making decisions from your grounded wise woman's place. In addition, get curious and sharpen your observation in an attempt to get glimpses of other parts that are active within your soul. Parts with voices that give you advice to which you listen. Where do they come from? Are they useful to you or hindering your truest desires? Write any of your insight from this in your journal.
Beautiful.
Yeah, that is really... So I have to just dive right in because I can only imagine you wrote this book before the whole Me Too movement was coming out.
Yeah, I wrote it 7 years ago.
Wow, is that right?
And I published it 6 years ago.
So, okay, so what's it like for you now, and what are your thoughts about kind of what's going on in today's climate with that?
Well, personally, it's awesome because, you know, 6 years ago, most people were saying, oh, yeah, this is really awesome, but stay the heck away from me. Kind of, you know, like people were like, yeah, this is so nice, but don't come close to me. I don't about it, and now I'm really welcome and I can talk about it and people want to talk about it, so I think it's a great step. And I also think that the Me Too movement is a great first step. This is first step in the healing process to actually say, okay, this happened to me. Mm-hmm. And then obviously there's more that needs to happen for actual healing to occur.
Wow. So it's interesting. So you say you said earlier that sexual abuse is not just a psychological problem, and you said it's
yes.
more in your body. So how did people heal from that?
Yeah, first I want to really make sure that people understand this, because it's really crucial, and a lot of people are blocked around healing because they think they have to relive trauma and they have to do all the psychological work. So just imagine that your body is it's a house, and when lightning, the trauma is like lightning striking a house. So when lightning strikes a house, you know, in the worst case scenario, the entire wiring of the house will fry, there will be fires, things will be melted, and afterwards, the energy of the house, the energy that would provide energy to the devices in the house, cannot flow correctly anymore. And so it's the same in your body. So, and in order to heal, you don't have to relive the lightning, basically, right? You don't have to go through the lightning experience again. What you have to do is you have to find the parts in your body where the wires are melted, where there was a fire. You know, I'm speaking in pictures, but basically, in my world, these places where the wiring in your house has been destroyed, mm-hmm. I call them negative energetic imprints. And we can feel them when we're triggered, mm. when we're triggered and are able to stay in our body and on, like, sensing our body, that's when we can actually feel these emotional or negative imprints and work with them.
Do you think that people do live in denial a lot and repress and move away from their experience because they are so afraid that they will just be constantly inundated with reliving the experience?
Yeah, I mean, most people, you know, repress or suppress it just so that they can kind of function.
Mm-hmm. It makes sense. It sounds like in that case with you, too, it's like you didn't even know. You know, you obviously had buried it so deeply.
But yet it wreaks havoc.
Yeah, and again, you know, I had these eating disorders and I had no idea why.
Yes.
And so that was, you know, one of my survival strategies,
yes.
you know. So, that, you know, it comes out in other places when you don't deal with the stuff directly.
Exactly.
And also, if you are having symptoms like addictions and you know, you're struggling, chances are that there has been some trauma, and that's why you have to develop some kind of coping mechanism. In my case, actually, the eating disorder was what was keeping me alive. When I found that out, that's what was the healing.
Mm-hmm.
That was the healing, because I had felt it was killing me this whole time.
Mm. I think we should maybe define for our audience, too, what constitutes sexual abuse, because I think a lot of people just think, well, I wasn't penetrated, or mm-hmm. I actually even enjoyed it, because, mm-hmm. you know, there are pleasure sensations mm-hmm. that can occur if somebody's a mm-hmm. mindful, thoughtful
yes.
perpetrator, if you will. Mm-hmm. It sounds gross.
Yeah. I mean,
no,
it's so
true.
Subjective, you know. It's so subjective. For somebody, they could have a really negative experience and just brush it off, and for somebody else, you know, somebody just looking at them inappropriately could completely confuse them and sort of, so there is really no, you can't really measure it. The only thing that you can measure is the degree to which you're having trouble mm-hmm. functioning in your life, having good relationships, you know, and being happy and feeling good about yourself.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I know I don't have any like solid memories of having been sexually abused per se, although my history has a very strong depression, suicidal, eating disorders, etc. For also teenager through. I had older memories of being raped, etc. But I did have this one who's actually like a third cousin, and I do remember staying at this woman's house who was kind of like a grandmother, because we didn't have any grandparents because of the losses in the family. And, you know, when our parents would go away, they would send us over to this woman's house and her husband. Mm-hmm. And I just remember walking into the bathroom
mm-hmm.
and he would be standing there naked mm-hmm. in the shower and with an erection
yeah.
and laughing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember anything before it. I don't remember anything
yeah.
after it, but I just remember there was a dark room afterward. And like, so, but nothing's ever come to me in
mm-hmm.
real physical form, but I kind of believe that there was more to it
sure.
than just that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I know I wasn't sad when he died, which was a few years later. I wasn't
wow.
sad at the funeral. I wasn't. Everybody talked about what a great man he was, how awesome. And I just remember saying, "No, he wasn't.
Wow.
No, he wasn't." But it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so scary how our body, our mind protects us
right.
almost.
But I like
ways.
What you say
yeah.
that it's like it being imprinted, because I think that those imprints, they just have such a they drive the direction of your life
mm-hmm.
until you stop and really heal that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think oftentimes people think the subconscious is like a part of our brain, but our body is actually, the cellular memory makes up the subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's part of it.
So I imagine that you know about trauma release therapy. And I'd love your thoughts about it. And if you don't know about it, if you can kind of, you know, talk a little bit about that. I don't know much about it, but I've heard about it.
There is not one modality that I use. I do family constellations, and I use a form of somatic experiencing, basically.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Tell us about family constellation therapy.
Yeah, I want to know
please.
About that, too.
It's a big word. Yeah.
Best thing to do is to go and experience it, because it is really very... very miraculous and fascinating. And the best way for me to describe it is really just to take you through my first constellation, which basically I went to a group with, there were 16 people there, and they all had different issues. Some were going through divorce, others had cancers and all kinds of stuff, and nobody knew each other. And throughout the weekend, everybody would get the constellation, and then it was my turn, and the facilitators just asked me to basically pick six people from the audience, and we were sitting in a circle. So I picked someone for my mother, someone for my father, for my siblings, and then for the eating disorder. And then they asked me to stand behind each person, put my hands on their shoulders and kind of close my eyes, and then intuitively just place them somewhere in the room.
Okay.
And so you do that with all the different pieces. Sometimes there's three pieces, sometimes there's, you know, two pieces, sometimes there's five pieces. It just depends on what you are constellating. And the reason why it's called constellations is because you literally constellate, you put the representatives for your issue in the room.
Okay.
And then as a client, you just sit down, and the facilitator will start asking these strangers, these people that don't know each other, questions on how they feel, how their relationships to each other are, and through that process, a ton of stuff will get revealed that normally we would not have access to. And this is where the miraculous part comes in, because these people that don't know you all of a sudden will know things where you're just like, your jaw is just going to drop, and you're like, oh my God, I had no idea. And they, you know, stuff that you maybe know from your family history, and then other things that you had no idea, that stuff that was going on in your, either within your psyche or in your family history, in your body. You know, if people can constellate cancer, for example, you know, your organs might be holding different viewpoints and things. So it's highly fascinating. And the process basically just, the facilitator asks these different components or people how they're feeling, and helps facilitate them into a place where they connect with each other again, and where basically when there was a dynamic of distortion, it moves towards a picture of connection. And it usually takes about 45 minutes to go through the process where this whole picture moves, and people will move and have different things to say, and usually it ends up in a place where you feel good, and you will have gone through some emotions, and also the representatives, you know, will talk to each other, look at each other. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it ends in a big hug, depending, you know, on it. But that is essentially the process. And what I think it does, this is like after me having been involved and immersed in this work for 20 years, is that it really changes us on a quantum, you know, it's basically applied quantum physics.
Yeah.
What it is. Yeah.
Wow. We are speaking with Carolyn Hauser Carson, who is the author of Blossom, Your Seven-Step Journey to Healing Childhood Sexual Abuse and Creating Your Dream Life. Oh my gosh, this is all so beautiful. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wanted to share a story. It's interesting. I hadn't thought about things for a long time, and then the whole Me Too movement came out, and I started to get really angry about what had happened and, like, you know, stuff that just had, I guess, laid dormant for a very long time. And I really thought about kind of my earliest memory of feeling powerless and, you know, just uncomfortable. And I just wanted to share this story because I think it's pretty powerful. My mom bought me a zipper jumpsuit. And it was gray, and it was fleece. And I remember wearing it in kindergarten. I loved it. It had, like, little flowers or something on it. I don't know, but it was gray. And it zipped from the top all the way to the bottom. And I remember in
down
kindergarten.
Down the legs.
Yeah. Okay. All the way to the top, to the bottom. And I remember going in kindergarten, and this boy says to me, "I'm going to zip down your jumper." And so he says to his two friends, like, "Here, hold her arms back."
Oh, wow.
And the other boy just sat and watched. And then the third boy unzipped my jumper all the way. And I was so mortified. And it was just such a scary feeling, you know, when someone's holding your arms back.
Yeah.
I don't know where the teacher was. I don't know. I can't remember anything. But I remember going home and feeling so shameful. And my mom asking, like, a couple weeks later, like, oh, do you want to wear your jumpsuit? I'm like, no.
No,
I'm not wearing it. And she's like, why? You loved it. You know, what happened? And I couldn't tell her. And that's the part that makes me so sad. Like, it almost felt like I was so ashamed. Like, you know,
which is so common for people.
So I so understand that. And not so much that I thought it was my fault, but like just that, like, you know, like I can't even talk about it. You know, it was so embarrassing type of feeling. But
that actually leads to a really important question, Carolyn. If you can answer this, then for parents who are listening, who have young children, and there are obviously some children, things happen to them, and they do tell their parents because they feel safe. And there's other children, even if they do feel safe with their parents, they have that shame, so they don't want to be seen as now damaged or wounded. So what kind of advice could you give to parents when they're raising their children about how to open up that forum in case anything like that would happen, or what to watch for?
Oh, that is a that is a very good and long question. Probably, I can just say for me, the way I've been parenting my children, and I've gotten a lot of flack from all people around in my family, it's been, from when they were little, I just saw them as full human beings, meaning I try to really allow them to, you know, I take them seriously, even if it seems like they're just being silly. And so, you know, it's not a one-time thing. It's how do you treat your children. If you are using, you know, if you're using punishment and reward for your children, they're not going to trust you most likely. Right, so this is a whole other, but it's a good question because, you know, the reason why I parent the way in that I am parenting is because my relationship with my mother was never one that where I felt like I could just go to her and get comfort and I would be safe.
Right.
And so I obviously did not want that for my daughter, and so I've been really making sure that I don't use any kind of manipulative tactics with her. And oftentimes we don't even know that we're doing it because it's so normal how we raise children.
Yes.
So, you know, there's lots of people who teach conscious parenting, and obviously it's not my expertise, but just really learning to take your children seriously, learn to communicate in a nonviolent way with them, and really taking them or respecting them for who they are. And I think, you know, my daughter is now a teenager, and or she's 12, turning 12, and I can see that kind of parenting really paying off. When they were younger, my family would say, "Oh my God, like, you know, why are you not more authoritarian? They're gonna dance on your nose, and you know, you need to be more in control of them, and so forth." And I just kept hoping and investing into our relationships so that by that time now, they would really feel comfortable, and they do.
That's great.
That's the best thing I can share.
Absolutely. And also, I think that one of the things that a lot of parents don't understand who do resort to physical punishment, I'm not talking about abuse because that's a whole different level, but a spanking or this, it kind of teaches your child that their body is not their own.
Mm.
And I've had a lot of clients who, when they're sexually molested later on or raped, it's because they really felt early on that because they were punished that way, that their body really wasn't theirs to determine whether something was good or bad against it. And that's so sad.
That's really sad. And the other thing I wanted to share, which helped me, I once heard a seminar on safety for kids, and something I never thought about. She said, when grandparents come in or aunts or uncles, you know, we're very inclined as parents. Oh, go give your aunt a hug.
Oh, right.
Go do that, you know. And
or your friends or anybody.
And she said, you know, please don't do that with your kids, because then they, you know, you have to teach them that they're getting an uncomfortable feeling for a reason, you know, and you don't want to squash that. And so I make sure with my kids, I always say, if you feel comfortable, you know, you can give blah, 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 a hug, or, you know, a fist pump, you know, and, you know, and it's like, you know, because I want them to feel like, okay, they're not going to be forced into any of that.
Is one of them a bigger hugger than the other?
Yes. Remy is a little bit more, my older one's a little bit more, you know, reserved to kind of do that. I mean, with me, he's super affectionate, but with other people, it's like a little bit, you know.
Because I just remember coming over sometimes and London would just come like sit in my lap.
Yes, that's
like,
London. Yeah. Exactly. Like, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Exactly. So
yeah, I mean, you basically want your children to teach to be self-directed, right? Sure. And when you punish them or reward them, you take that away from them. You take their inner guidance system away from them.
Right.
Right. Exactly. And so if you let them navigate on their own and make mistakes and give them the freedom, they will learn to be more self-directed, and they'll also learn to trust their instincts.
Yeah.
And I like what you said about nonviolent communication, because that's such an important component that I think when people get frustrated and, you know, their children aren't, quote, minding them, et cetera, and then they take it out on their children by saying shaming things to them. Mm. Why are you being so bad? Why aren't you like your brother?
Right.
Those are the kinds of languaging that really makes children feel shameful and bad about themselves. And they're not going to come to you and tell you if something's going on that shouldn't be.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, you could have the best of all intentions, and also the way you've been raised is deeply ingrained. I mean, I was surprised of what sometimes come out of my mouth, you know, when I hadn't slept in like 3 days with the baby and stuff like that, you know. So the programming is there for all of us, and it takes awareness just to put differently.
Which is why it's so important, your message in your book about sexual healing, because if you don't heal that stuff, the likelihood of you acting that out through your own children on some unconscious level is very high.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or not protecting your children, right? But putting them in situations where if you were not in denial, you would know that this is not a safe, place to leave your children or things like that.
So how can women feel safe again with a sexual partner when they have been sexually abused?
With their you mean their present sexual partner?
Yeah, now
as
an adult, they have a sexual partner, and you know, a lot of women just, they have a lot of issues. How do they feel safe and protected within their own selves?
Yeah, so what's important to understand is that when trauma happens, your brain gets altered, and the reptilian brain, so the more basically the survival brain, gets put in charge. That's why you feel scared, and that's why you feel like nothing is safe, because that is that brain's job. That brain's job is to scan if things are safe or not safe, and if they're not safe, then to do some, to run, basically.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you see your life through that lens, it's pretty exhausting and stressful. And so one of the things that need to happen is to help yourself so that brain calms down or switches off, so that you have access to the other two parts of your brain, which are the much bigger parts of your brain and are the parts where you can make logical decisions, where you can actually get intuitive hits and all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And so in my book, that's part of what I teach people, is to help your brain to relax so that you can actually be connected to your intuition, and that way you can feel safe.
Thank you so much for that. There's an interesting phenomenon that I have witnessed, and you know, to some extent even occurred with me. There are women who are sexually abused young, or physically abused, another, you know, similar violation of the body, and then they turn out to become very promiscuous when they're you know, teenagers and young adults, and actually constantly re-victimize themselves by putting themselves in a dissociative state or in a drugged state, and then allowing themselves to have sex with people they don't want to, but acting like they enjoy it. And then when they come full circle around to saying all the shame and embarrassment they have about what they did to themselves, not just about what was done to them, because you know, you can't blame a guy if you're out with him and you decide to have sex and you didn't say no and he wants to have sex and he has a good time. It's not his fault. He didn't perpetrate. But then that experience of resolve to be able to say, I don't want to do that to myself anymore, and not totally shut down from sexual energy at all. Can you speak to that at all? I know that was another mouthful.
Yeah. Okay. So part of the work that I do is, or most of the work that I do is really based on energy. There's low vibrational energy patterns and there's high vibrational energy patterns. And shame, guilt, all that kind of bad behavior you were describing has to do with just being in a low vibrational state. Even, you know, depression, anger, those are all more low vibrational states. So for anybody, you know, to to really get to a different place where you feel differently. It's really just about working with your energy and getting yourself into a better place. Mm-hmm. So let's say, you know, you're in that place where you're doing all these things to punish yourself, or it's all connected to shame. Like, these behaviors are all connected to shame and guilt, essentially. Have a vibrational level of 20 to 30. Courage is at 200. Anything below 200 is life-destroying. Mm. Anything over 200. So if someone who basically has been living in a state of below 200, mm-hmm. if they can get themselves into a state where they have courage, then they can go to hope and then acceptance. And all of that can happen through working with your body and through transforming the negative energy into positive.
It doesn't matter how
deeply you are ingrained in it or not.
How do you measure it? Yeah, we both have the same question. How do you measure vibrational energy?
I think that people that are scientists can measure it too, because it is energy. Where I learned this from is from Dr. David Hawkins. He was a psychiatrist, and he measured it through kinesiological testing. Mm. He came up with a scale of consciousness and vibrational levels.
That's so cool.
And so for me, that makes it really simple, because it takes it out of, oh, you have to work on self-forgiveness and you have to do all this work on yourself. And mm-hmm. it's basically just, no, you just need to learn to help yourself feel a little better.
Can you share
physically
with us?
And
mm-hmm. can you share with us maybe some stories of clients that have come to you and healed? And I would love to hear, you know, a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, I'll share my own story that really where I basically learned all the stuff. 5 years ago, I had a complete breakdown after I had published my book. I had chronic fatigue, I had burnout, I had went through divorce, bankruptcy. Everything was just basically in a state of lack, and it had become so bad that I had a physical breakdown and left my body. And during that time that I left my body, I saw how I was. How I had allowed all this negativity into my being. Mm-hmm. And so after that, then I have had clients who basically went from being complete workaholics and never taking time for themselves because they had subconscious shame and guilt for doing so, moms mostly, to, completely changing their businesses and living now in the Caribbean, having another baby, traveling the world with the family, really living their purpose. I've had women who, one person in particular comes to mind, who she would come to me and she was wanting to build her own business and she just never could get herself to doing anything. The moment she would wake up, things started to happen. The cat would throw up on her carpet, so she had to clean the cat, and then the dog needed to poo, and then her son came, and then the husband, and on and on and on and on, just, you know, nonstop. It seemed like everybody wanted something from her all the time, and she was just not in charge of her own time. And so for her, that's completely changed. She's mm-hmm. a speaker now. She's running her business. And for her, it really came from her dad had died really early, and so she had carried a lot of grief around losing him. And so when mm-hmm. that heartbreak was healed through the constellations, mm-hmm. She was able to allow herself to have a happy life too. Sometimes, you know, we have these unconscious loyalties when people that we've loved are gone. Mm-hmm. We basically, you know, I don't want to have a good life too. You had to die, so I want to die now too, and therefore I'm going to do all this stuff to myself.
Oh, mm-hmm. survivor guilt. Yeah,
yes.
That's tough.
Yeah,
Carolyn, you have a exercise in your book that says releasing your parents, which I think is really important. But can you speak to that? If it was actually one of your parents who mm-hmm. sexually abused you, or if it was a parent who knew you were being molested by someone else and didn't do anything about it.
So your question is how to release your parents?
Yeah, I understand that with the parents who did the best they could and they didn't know and all that and not holding them accountable. Mm-hmm. But if let's say I had been molested by my actual father mm-hmm. and my mother knew about it, how would one release their parents in that regard?
In general, you know, in the constellation, what we do, and obviously, you know, I'm telling you now what I'm doing, but normally people go through a process where this really becomes true for them mm-hmm. because they go into a process and through the process, they will arrive at this truth. So from the constellation work, I know that basically the greatest gift anybody can give us is giving us life, right? And so our parents have given us that by virtue of our birth. Mm-hmm. Our parents have given us the greatest gift that anybody could give to us. And so if we can come to a place where we're just grateful for having received the gift of life, right? And a lot of people struggle around that because they're like, well, you know, what good is it if, you know, you did this to me, I would have rather not been born.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah, so the work is really around actually being grateful for your life. And then when you can get to that place, you can be grateful to your parents.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything else that they did is actually just icing on the cake, basically.
Mm.
And I know this is, you know, this is difficult to understand for some people, but
yeah,
when it's a experienced reality, it completely sets you free. Then you can just love them for who they are.
Sure.
And, you know, if it's a toxic relationship, you can have peace with them. You don't have to be around them. My relationship with my mother has completely transformed. So, you know, we have a good relationship now.
Mm-hmm.
But I know for some people that is not possible. You know, if there's mental health and issues involved and so forth, sometimes it's not possible for you in this life to really have contact, physical contact with your birth parents, but you can still have peace.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to cut them out or, you know, sever your ties.
Sure.
And that is so empowering, isn't it, when we don't have to, mm-hmm, hold ourselves hostage to what somebody else did to us and really be able to thrive. It's just such a,
right,
beautiful gift we give to ourselves,
yeah,
and the world.
Exactly.
Mm.
Well, so
And we actually energetically do need our parents connected to us in order to really be fully able to live, because, mm-hmm, we come from them, and, you know, we are half and half basically, and as long as we're rejecting one or the other, we're rejecting ourselves.
Hmm, super interesting.
Interesting. Then I wonder, do you recommend that people who were adopted find their biological birth parents?
Yeah, I mean, I work with people that have been adopted, and for them also, for them to find peace, it's really important to get things in order that their biological parents are their parents, and then their adoptive parents are the parents that they raised them, and they each have their place.
That's so interesting.
Children that have been adopted suffer when the real parents are denied or excluded, basically.
And yet there's such a push for closed adoptions. Isn't that,
right,
interesting?
Mm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
You should be lobbying to change some,
right,
of that.
Exactly.
Carolyn.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody does kind of uncover this and realize it sort of later in life like you did, what do you suggest that they first do?
Get my book.
Right. Of course.
Exactly. Okay. And just kind of start, you know, and just kind of start doing the exercises.
Yeah.
Okay.
The book really comes with a lot of, the book is just, it's a starting, and then there's downloadable recordings. There's a guide that you can download. I have an ongoing group that people can join. So there's a lot of support that comes with the book. And then obviously, if people want my help, they can reach out to me too. I do retreats. That's the main way I work with people.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, I always recommend, if somebody can, to just come with me for 3 or 4 days and do a deep dive. And then I usually, you know, have a little bit of time with them before and after,
mm-hmm,
so that they're being supported.
And this group that you have, that's a support group, is this like an online support group?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's,
mm-hmm,
great. That's wonderful. So great.
Yeah.
Mm, what a gift that you're giving to so many people, really.
I think, you know, what you said, of course, get your book, because it's a fabulous book called Blossom, 7 Steps to Sexual Healing. But I think, too, it would be valuable when someone really does have that, maybe that first flashback or a memory,
mm-hmm,
comes to life, or somebody comes forward and actually tells them information they maybe thought about, mm-hmm, but nobody was brave enough to actually share with them, to just take a pause, take a deep breath, and just be, you know, quiet within yourself to just sort of formulate how you want to process this, and just really being loving, because I think people sometimes get so harsh with themselves in these situations,
mm-hmm,
you know, and to even be able to take,
yeah,
that step to get help or to reach out, there's some sort of natural work that needs to be done internally too.
Yeah, you know, I think when you decide that you're ready, I mean, you know, you could be super scared and you don't need to know how, but for you, you could come to a place where you say, okay, I'm ready to heal this. And then in my experience, the right resources and the right things always appear when you're ready.
Sure.
Yeah.
Good point. So what are some things that we didn't cover in this interview that's very important for you to share with our listeners?
The most important thing I want people to take away from this interview is that it is not scary. The healing process is not scary. It really has to do with your own energy. And the good thing about you and your own energy is that, you know, while you don't have power over what happened, you don't have power over people, you don't have power over circumstances, you do have power over your own energetic field and your own energetic state of being. And to come back to that and really focus on learning tools and things and making it a daily priority to, just like you wash yourself and you take care of yourself, to learn how to take care of your own energy. And, you know, to just to give you an example, I was sharing how I went, you know, how I was on the couch and literally had nothing, bankruptcy and everything. Within a very short amount of time, I've met my divine partner. I've served over 5,000 people. I've sold close to a million in my own services. I've completely recovered from the chronic fatigue.
Really?
All because of this, all because I make my own energy management my top priority. And so it means taking time to rest. It means taking time to do stuff that feed your soul. It means feeding yourself well. It means exercising, all those things, and making them a priority, not leaving them for the end of the day.
Right.
Wonderful.
That's very true.
And are you from Germany originally? Or is
yes.
Yes, you are.
Yeah, I came here 14 years ago.
Oh, you did? Wow.
It'd be fascinating to know statistically, is there a higher rate of sexual abuse in childhood in Germany or here, or do you not know? I don't know at all.
I know that there. I know from from other healers that they said anybody that they met in Germany seemed to have sexual abuse.
Really?
History. But that was just an anecdotal.
Wow, that's interesting.
And I do think that probably in other parts of the world the numbers are even higher, right? Because, you know, who, like in Africa or in Middle Eastern countries, who's even keeping track?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Wow.
Right. So true.
So.
Wow, you were such a wonderful guest, and thank you so much for doing this for, you know, women all over the world, and you're just super helpful, and we so appreciate what you're doing.
We have been speaking with Carolyn Hauser Carson, who is the author of the book Blossom, Your Seven Steps Journey to Healing Childhood Sexual Abuse and Creating Your Dream Life. Where can people find you, and where can people get the book?
Yeah, my website is womenintheflow.com. That's womeninthe.com. You can find the book on my website. You can find it on Amazon. And then on my website, there is a link to my free Facebook group. I do daily energy meditations in the group. You can ask me questions, and I often do Facebook Lives on, you know, on the questions that people ask. There's a community if you want to learn how to be a more high vibrational person, a woman.
That's awesome.
Come to the group and join me there.
That's so cool.
I might come visit
me
you
too.
In Santa Barbara because I'm a neighbor.
And I'm going to join your group. That sounds fascinating to me.
Totally.
Yes,
totally. Thank you. Thank you so very, very much. A beautiful book, a beautiful lady.
Yes.
And thank you for all of your wisdom.
Yes.
Okay, Kelly, remind me, who do we have next
week? Next week we have Nisha Zenoff. She is the author of The Unspeakable Loss. She talks about losing a child. She lost a child of her own. So it's going to be a heavy show, but, you know, I think it's good for a lot of our listeners out there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, great.
Awesome.
So cool.
Okay,
all right,
everybody.
So have a good week.
I'm going to lay off roller coasters for a while.
No, I think you should. Well, you heard what our guest said. Rest, relaxation, get your body back to balance.
That's it. I want to improve my vibrational energy.
Right, exactly.
Okay, love it.
All right, well, thank you guys so
Bye.
Much. And if you want to follow us on Instagram at @twoshrinks, TWOSHRINKS. And we'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.